Trigoris, M30.898. Chapter 7. The flyer shot low over the plains, almost seeming to graze the tips of the blue-green grass, sending a long furrow swaying behind it with a hiss and a ripple. It was a single-occupant craft, controlled by two slaved servitor cortexes, both dumb and mute. Yasugai sat in the bubble dome rear, watching the empty landscape speed past. He was not wearing his armor, but had reverted to adapted versions of the clothes he had worn before ascension. A calf-length wool deal, leather boots, and a crimson sash denoting his rank and specialism. The flyer's air filters were open, allowing the wind to buffet into the cockpit, making his long black hair flutter around his scarred face. In the far west rose the line of the Kumkata Mountains, dark blue against the pale of the sky's arch. In all other directions, there was nothing but the whispering knee-high grass, ruffled by the booming wind and churning under the glare of the sun. So much of it was still as empty as it had ever been. Some worlds had been utterly transformed following compliance, a number of them by the Khan's own hand, but not Trigoris. Only a single pocket of terrain had been altered from its primeval state, forged, raised up, and dragged into the Imperium of the Crusade. Out across the vast expanses of reiki grass, nothing much else had altered. The nation still fought, cleaving to old ties of honour and oath-making. Only now they did so under the watchful eyes of recruiters for the Legion. After the bloodiest encounters, tribal Khans had grown used to the tally of bodies not quite adding up, the bravest and the youngest being spirited away as if by ghosts. A new mythology had entered the crowded Trigorian panoply of gods and demons, that of the Kina Avdar, those who steal the brightest souls. This event was understood to be the highest honour, and the losses were celebrated rather than mourned. On clear nights, those same tribes might witness the glowing trails of landers scoring the empty heavens, hauling the taken warriors out of time and experience to fight wars beyond the mortal plane. Fires would be lit across the plains to mark their passing. They could have been rapidly civilized, those tribes. They could have had compliance teams sent among them, technology given to them, reactor-powered cities constructed for them to live in. Such things had even been discussed back in the very first days, but the Khan had ruled against it soon after the first substantive discussions with his father.
"I know now that this world is uniquely blessed," he had said to Yasugai back then, the light of the encounter still reflected in his face. "It births the strong without rancor. It nurtures vigor without pride. Nothing must change that."
The line of mountains drew closer. Their lower slopes were fir-clad and stacked with steep cliffs of grey stone. Cataracts tumbled down broken sandstone shelves, feeding the Orkhon River that wound lazily out into the plains. There were hard edges in the Kumkata Range, ridges of ossified granite pushed up from the planet's mantle, creating spire pinnacles that tore at the clouds like fingers. No one had lingered much in those places until he had come. Only beasts and those few souls seeking the test of heaven had trodden its ice-glazed maze of defiles, shrived by the thin air and perishing gales. Now, uniquely on Trigoris, the mountains had been transformed. Huge foundations had been delved and solidified by hovering mechanicum terraforming engines. Walls had been raised, sheer against the already sheer natural cliffs, buttressed with adamantium ribs and crowned with lascannon emplacements. Sanctuaries had been constructed in the Khitan style, rising one above another until they shot higher into the atmosphere than the naked peaks had done, blasted smooth by the storms and bearing the lightning strike sigil of the gods. The Monastery Bastion, they had called it. At once palace, fortress, jail and library, the new repository for the 5th Legion's entire history, personnel and cultural artefacts. Vast quantities of materiel, supplies and combat records had been lifted down from warships in orbit, reverently checked and marked, then interred in frozen depot chasms carved into the mountain's heart. Terran scribes and tech rites were imported, as well as specialists from 100 other worlds, all of them made to swear oaths of allegiance to the Kargon and put to work turning the bastion, by then named Quan Zhao, into one of the mightiest citadels in the growing Imperium. During the most active phase of its 30 years of construction, it was said that the earth shook and the skies heaved, leaving the Kum Kata wreathed in lightning and the skies shot with tongues of fire. The Jagorian tribes fell back behind the line of the Ulav, their seers frantically consulting the augurs for signs of apocalypse. They never came back. By the Khan's decree, a cordon was set about the new fortress, sealing it from the roving nations of the steppes, such that only the ascended and their indentured menial carders dwelt in those halls at the roof of the world. Later imperial delegations would assume that this was to keep the citadel free of the barbarous habits of the Altak. In fact, the opposite was true. Quan Zhao was isolated in order to keep Chagoris free of the taint of the Imperium. Thus was the fortress's Khitan title explained, the Forbidden Citadel. No roads led there, no gates opened out onto the lowlands below. It was inviolate, like a mountain itself, only greater and stronger than any natural terrain. Yusugai watched the walls loom closer as the flyer began to ascend. Parts of them were still unfinished, covered in a thick lattice of scaffolding, while the Mechanicum's red lacquered drones crawled over them. A fifth great landing platform was nearing completion, ready to receive the big crew haulers that would carry whole regiments of legionaries up to waiting strike cruisers. Pennants bearing the golden red sigil of the Legion fluttered in the stiff breeze, trailing like prayer banners over the pale rockcrete. The flyer slowed, gliding through the towers and the domes, eventually touching down on a hexagonal platform jutting from the summit of a tall spire. The armor glass bubble folded away, and Yusugai walked down the extending embarkation ramp. A single portal opened before him, guarded by two warriors of the Legion in glistening ivory plate. As Yusugai approached, the heavy doors slid open, revealing another storm seer bearing two staffs, both crowned with equine skulls and decked with ritual totems. He was wearing full power armor, and a crystalline psychic hood rose up over his exposed head.
Narambata, said Yusugai, bowing, before taking the second staff.
As soon as his hands neared the crisscross patterned wood, threads of barely visible force snaked between his fingers and the thick bands of metal around the shaft. Both Stormseers were surrounded by an aura like reflected sunlight, a faint quickening of the elements, as if the world became more vivid in their presence.
"You were successful?" Yasugai's deputy asked, returning the bow. "Not this time." "Aye, there will be better days." "That there will."
The two of them passed inside the spire's pinnacle. Although Yusugai was far less imposing out of his heavy Mark II armor, something about the way he carried himself gave away the disparity in power between them. Narambata was younger, though he had been a full member of the Legion for 12 years, and was one of the Chagorian recruits whose numbers had been steadily growing since the foundations of the fortress had been laid. He had not performed the functions of a Zadian Aga within his tribe prior to his ascension. That aptitude had been discovered during gene surgery, but since then his development had been prodigious.
"In any case,"
Narambata said, leading his master down a spiral stair cut into the stone,
"the rate of incorporation may have to slow. The apothecaries tell me they are working far beyond capacity. Perhaps let some warriors live their lives for a little while longer before plucking them here, hey?"
Yusugai grinned.
"Do not let the Kargon hear you say that. It will never be fast enough for him."
They passed through a second set of doors, moving outside again. A wide courtyard stretched away before them, open to the sky and bordered with plane trees. Long banners inscribed with calligraphic sigils swayed in the breeze. Curls of incense whispered across the stone flags, snatched away by the wind and sent tumbling out over the terraces below.
They tell me anyway parity will be reached soon, Naran Bhatar offered.
It may already have done so,
Yasugai said.
Recruitment from Tara has slowed, they say. We are not, I believe, seen as a prestige legion.
Naran Bhatar smiled.
Which are, I wonder?
The 13th.
Yasugai glanced at his protege with some amusement.
Watch that one.
Then he laughed.
How do things progress here?
They moved across the western end of the courtyard. Above them rose four slender watchtowers, each surmounted by a golden dome that winked in the sunlight. An arrowhead of birds flapped lazily overhead, buoyed by the mountain's thermals.
See for yourself,
said Naran Bhatar, gesturing ahead. A square arena had been cleared at the far end of the courtyard, laid with fine sand and bordered with a low iron wall. At each corner a statue stood, symbolizing the four dragon winds of the Altaq. On the far three sides, the ground fell away in steep walls, exposing the promontory spur to the whine of the world's winds. A single acolyte stood in the center of the sacred space, clad in white robes. He had the telltale upper body bulk of a space marine, and the ridges of his black carapace were visible under the wrinkles of his tunic. His head was bare and shaved, the ritual scar still livid along his left cheek. He carried a long staff, free of ornament. Armored attendants stood watch around the perimeter. Facing the acolyte was a wooden image, man-sized, carved in the likeness of a bird-headed element demon of Chagorian myth. The two senior storm seers took their places, and Naran Bhatar gestured for the acolyte to begin. He drew the staff before him, holding it loosely two-handed. He tensed, and the muscles of his arm tightened. His eyes closed, and a line of sweat from previous exertions ran down from his temple. Above him, almost imperceptibly at first, the wind began to quicken. An eddy broke out, spinning above the promontory, sucking in energy and flickering with pale lightning. The air seemed to shudder, to heat up, to thicken. The sand drummed, shaking into concentric wave patterns on the stone. The acolyte lowered his staff, pointing at the image of the element demon. With his eyes closed, he mouthed ritual words, channeling the pent-up force down the length of the shaft. The build-up was instantly detectable, a burning, spun out of nothing and wrenched into the world of the senses. With a final clenched-jawed utterance, the acolyte released the holding ward, and a jet of searing lightning flashed out from his staff's tip, leaping across the space and cracking into the wooden idol. The figure ignited instantly, flaring up in a plume of blue-edged flame. The acolyte span the staff around, freeing a single hand. He clenched it into a fist and pulled downwards. The idol blew apart, scattering in a shower of charred fragments. The sand kicked up in a rolling shockwave, spilling over the parapet where it was pulled into gauzy clouds by the fading storm surge. A dull echo of the thunderclap came back from the far cliff edges, gradually fading away as the world's weather reasserted itself. In the distance, the shocked cawing of birds could just be made out. The acolyte, breathing heavily, recovered himself. He looked up, bowed formally, and took up the staff once more in both hands. Yasugai stepped onto the sand and walked up to him.
"Your name, brother?" he asked.
"Borgal,"
the acolyte replied, working to control his breathing.
"Zadjin Aga in your tribe?"
"No."
That was the most usual answer. The test of heaven, the esoteric rite taken by those who became the shamans of the tribal nations, was usually taken too late for candidates for the Legion. So it was more common to discover physical promise in recruits and only later detect psychic ability. Those recruits faced the hardest trials of all, their body, mind, and soul all tested to the limits of destruction before new strength could come. Yasugai glanced at the smouldering ruins of the image, looked over the swirl pattern in the sand, then grunted in approval.
"You have learned quickly. Tell me, what do you feel when you do these things?" I do not... You understand me. What do you feel?
Borgar hesitated. Then he lifted his head to face Yasugai. His brown irises were already lightening, fading to an amber that would one day, if he survived long enough, become gold.
Power, he said.
Yasugai nodded.
Yes, that is the danger.
He placed his calloused hand on the acolyte's shoulder.
Power is what you already have. We bring you here to leash it. We bring you here to make this thing as natural to you as breathing, and as swift. If that creature had been real, it would have ripped your heart out while you were speaking the right words. It is not about power. It is about limitation, and then understanding.
The acolyte nodded, chastened.
But the strength cannot be denied, said Yasugai, grinning at him and slapping his hand on his shoulder. You will be formidable. Just stay alive a little longer, please. I would like to see you use that in the crusade.
Borgor bowed. The attendants ventured onto the sand to clear away the wreckage, and the two Stormseers moved off, walking back towards the double doors, passing under the sharp shadows of the plane trees.
They are getting better, said Yasugai. My congratulations. And yet, when we train them, we do not know where to place them, said Naran Batar. You cannot leave it to the Khans. It has been too long since we last argued over this. And the answer remains the same. That the Khan must decide. When will that... He is coming. Soon.
Yasugai looked at his deputy.
He has had years of fighting now. He has seen worlds burning at his hand, 100 of them. He wishes to accelerate the pace of conquest. This is only a part of what he plans. I could give him 100 weathermakers this day. They could level any wall for him. They could rip the galaxy apart.
Yasugai smiled sadly.
If it were that simple, if we were alone in the Imperium, there would be little need for debate. But we are not. The Khargan has his brothers, and there is the distant gaze of Golden Terror. These things must be managed.
They reached the doors, and the hazy screen of incense became briefly pungent.
There is one, calling himself the Lord of Death, who is master of a legion of terror troops, as formidable as any scion of the throne. I studied his doctrine from afar, admiring some of it, repelled by the rest. He is damaged, I think. But that matters not. We are all damaged in some way or other, and his effectiveness is not in question.
Naran Batar listened.
He has forbidden the use of sorcery within his ranks, Yasugai said. Purged it. He has a following at the Terran courts, and powerful voices within the Imperial army have been raised in his support. That should not surprise us. This is, after all, the message of unity. We are the outliers. It is only one legion. There are others. The Wolves of Fenris, though I do not entirely understand their position, since there are rumours of gifted individuals among them. The tally grows. Though we endeavour to remain isolated, one day we will have to fight alongside all of them.
Naran Batar looked back over to the training ground, watching as another acolyte was put through his paces by the instructors. The air began to fizz again, its constituent parts being stressed beyond endurance by the release of energies from the far side of the veil.
We have never looked to others for approval, he said. It will have to be settled.
Naran Batar shook his head.
We should ignore it. Let it pass us by. Perhaps. That may be what the Khan orders.
Yasugai looked pensive.
But there may be strength in numbers, a way to preserve all this. That is the matter at hand. It is why he returns.
Naran Batar thought about that for a moment. The ritual words of summoning drifted over on the air, uttered by the next acolyte in a long line. Just as had happened for millennia on Trigoris, the ways of the Weathermaker were being learned, honed, extended.
"And so,"
he said eventually,
"will he meet this Lord of Death, then?"
"Not by choice."
"But he is important to this, or you would not have mentioned him."
"I do not know, truly."
Isugai turned back to the doorway, and the lintel shadow fell across his face.
"We are storm weavers, not future readers. Who really knows? It may be nothing, or it may be everything."
He went inside. Naran-Bhatar followed him in, smiling dryly.
"Conclusive as ever, then," he said.